Yesterday, we explored air pollution in Maine and the Bush administration's assault on the Clean Air Act. Last week, we examined the situation with Iraq and ties with oil. This week, the UN Council of Sustainable Development meets in South Africa. Plainly, these issues need to be addressed at the policy level. Today, we examine what the individual can do to impact air quality and oil dependence through small-scale alternative energy. We're hoping today we'll have on the phone line with us Jeff Burke of the Isla Hose Keeper House Inn. So if you're out there, please call in. This Sunday, August 25th, the Isla Hose Lighthouse Committee, the Keeper's House Inn, and Landscape and Architecture hosted Solar Sunday out on Isla Hose. The Keeper's House Inn and Jeff and Judy Burke's own house are off the grid using solar and wind power, and they've begun to use biodiesel in their boat, also have alternative humanure composting. On Sunday, the Burke Solar Sunday was a day-long of demonstrations with area users and installers of alternative energy technology. In the studio with us today, we have Andrea DeFrancesco and Keith Pearson of the newly formed Down East Biodiesel Co-op. This is a call-in program, and we welcome and encourage listeners to call in with their experiences with alternative energy or with their questions and comments. And those numbers are 469-0500 or toll-free at 866-625-9378. Welcome, Andrea and Keith.
Welcome. Thanks.
Well, why don't we start off with an explanation of what biodiesel is?
Well, biodiesel is an alternative to diesel fuel. It's derived from any kind of oil. Usually it's vegetable oil, but it can be animal fat. It can be any kind of oil. And biodiesel has gone through a process where lye and methyl alcohol have been mixed with it to create a chemical reaction to break the glycerin off of the oil molecule, and what's left is called esters, and that's what you burn in your diesel tank. And you can burn the biodiesel in anything that you burn regular petroleum diesel in, whether it's your home heating oil system or your boat or your tractor or your car. Anything that burns diesel, you can burn biodiesel in.
And what's the benefit of that?
The biodiesel has a lot of benefits. It's a renewable fuel. It's a lot easier to produce oil from vegetable material than it is to produce it from ancient rock. But also the emissions are greatly, greatly reduced with biodiesel. There's with 100% biodiesel, you're reducing your carbon monoxide by 50%, your particulate matter, which by 30%, and all the emissions are greatly reduced. And particulate matter, in particular, is a big cancer concern. So that's a pretty big one. So the emissions are reduced across the board, and it also runs in your motor better. It runs in the engine better. These days, with reformulated diesel, they're taking the sulfur out to meet air emission standards, because sulfur is very dangerous for living things. But by taking out the sulfur, they're reducing the value of the fuel, because a lot of the engines are fuel lubricated. They have fuel lubricated pumps and whatever. And when you take the sulfur out, the engine can't lubricate itself the way it needs to. With biodiesel, it doesn't have sulfur in it, but its lubricity is even higher than regular diesel. So by using biodiesel, your engine is getting lubricated as it needs to. So in some places, they even use biodiesel as an additive to bring the lubricity back up after the sulfur has been taken out.
So it's better for the environment, both in terms of extraction, where it comes from, and overall health effects of when it's being burned, and it's also better for your vehicle.
Yeah, it really smooth. You can notice a big difference when you put it into the motor. It smooths it out. The color of the exhaust is no longer black. And another benefit is that it's got a real potential for local production and local, more localized distribution. So where you're not going to be shipping it all the way from Saudi Arabia or the Alaskan National Preserve. Mm-hmm. You can potentially make it in a very small radius of where it's going to be used.
And you can put it into an engine with no changes to the engine.
The only things to consider with biodiesel is that it's a really, really good solvent. So with regular diesel, petroleum diesel will leave a film on the inside of your fuel tank and on the inside of your lines. And when you start running biodiesel, especially 100% biodiesel, it's going to clean that film off the inside of the tank and lines and send it through your system into your filter. So your filter will plug up unless you change it more often, more frequently during the first couple of weeks. I think it's after the first 20 hours
or 1,000 miles.
20 hours or 1,000 miles, they recommend changing it. And then the other thing is that because it's such a good solvent, it also will degrade natural rubber. So you want to make sure that your vehicle doesn't have any natural rubber hoses or natural rubber seals in the pumps. And generally, it's safe to assume that you don't have natural rubber components in your vehicle if your vehicle was made after 1994. I think Volkswagen stopped using natural rubber in 1980, but I'm not positive about that. The best thing to do is to find that out about your specific use before you go ahead and do that. But that's with 100%. The other thing about biodiesel is that you can mix it with petroleum diesel in any amount. So you can just mix it right in. A lot of people just mix in 20% biodiesel with the regular diesel, and they still get emissions reductions. The carbon monoxide is reduced by 20%. The particulates are reduced by 22%, and that's just using 20% biodiesel. And you don't have to worry so much about the rubber or the solvency.
And biodiesel has been gaining great momentum in use in the U.S., or can you talk about its...
It's becoming very popular recently, a number of reasons, which Andrew was just talking about. It's better for the environment, better for the air, better for people's health. And it has been gaining popularity across the country. And one of the things that we've been working on around up here in Maine is forming a co-op. It's not quite large enough to be able to have distribution points as many as say gas stations or diesel stations. So right now we've formed a biodiesel purchasing co-op to be able to get biodiesel into this area, so people who can't necessarily afford huge quantities for themselves can become part of a group that can purchase large quantities and then divide it up from there.
Great, and people can use it also as home heating oil as well as for boats, trucks?
Correct.
Any use at all?
Any application of diesel.
And I'm sorry, did you want to jump in there?
One other thing is that it is gaining popularity, and one of the things that's being looked into is for school buses. There's a big concern about the use of petroleum diesel in school buses and standing there in school parking lots with 8 or 9 or 15 or however many buses on and all the exhaust going through the whole school and all the kids who are breathing in this exhaust on a regular basis.
And Maine with the highest asthma rate in the country, as we learned yesterday.
That's right. And they have linked petroleum diesel or the exhaust with asthma, lung problems, and general health of especially children who are whose lungs aren't as developed and need to breathe more often. So they end up breathing in a lot more of the toxins. So one of the things that's being looked into is changing the school bus fleets over to biodiesel, and which, as Andrew was saying, can drastically reduces a lot of the emissions and these particulate matter. And certain research that has been performed on this subject, the results saying that the cancer-causing potential of biodiesel particulate matter is 80% less than that of petroleum diesel. And it also significantly reduces most EPA-targeted emissions, such as unburned hydrocarbons, particulate matter, and carbon monoxide.
And there's a lot of school bus fleets that have already gone to biodiesel. I believe Medford, New Jersey, was the first one, and they went to biodiesel probably 5 years ago. And since then, more and more fleets are a popular place that biodiesel starts getting used, garbage truck fleets or school bus fleets or city bus fleets, because they have a centralized fueling location. So it's easier for them to just order a large quantity of the biodiesel, keep it in a centralized location, and then fuel their vehicles.
Is there some sort of tax cut or some sort of green tax?
There's a mandate, a federal mandate, that fleets, I think 75% of new fleet vehicles have to be using alternative fuels. There's a lot of emissions regulations that federal vehicles and fleets have to meet, and they have to meet them by having alternative fuel vehicles. Biodiesel is a good one because they can meet their alternative fuel requirements by using biodiesel without buying new vehicles, without retraining mechanics, without retrofitting vehicles, and doing all sorts of costly alterations which may need to be upgraded or renovated within the next 5 years if something new comes online. With biodiesel, they can make the switch quickly and easily now, meet their requirements, reduce their toxic emissions, and then if something better like hydrogen fuel cells come online in 5 years, they can switch to that without having already sunk a huge amount of money into something else.
Great. We do have Jeff Burke on the phone line, and I'll just give out the number again here in the studio for anyone who would like to call in to talk about their experiences with alternative energy and technologies in their own life, or have any questions for the guests we have in the studio, or just any comments about either the use of alternative energy or the philosophy of using alternative energy.
And what you're doing to cut down on your oil dependence in your life.
Yes, and those numbers are 469-0500 or 866-625-9378. Jeff Burke, welcome.
Welcome, Meredith. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Well, we heard that Solar Sunday was a huge success in the fact that 150 people gathered in one place in Maine is a pretty good turnout.
Especially out on an island only accessible by boat and mail ferry.
Right.
So why don't you tell us about that day, and in doing so, I guess you'll be telling us about what technologies you're using in your off-the-grid inn and house over in Ailaho.
Sure. Well, it was a wonderful day, Meredith. It rained in the morning, and the event was scheduled from noon to 5 o'clock, and at exactly noon, the last cloud drifted away, and the solar cookers started sizzling within about 15 minutes, and the hot water started heating up, and PAX, our biodiesel boat, started chugging up and down the thoroughfare, taking people for rides, and the musicians started singing, and the food got better, and it just went on and on and on. The lighthouse was open, solar-powered, of course. Our lighthouse is powered entirely by photovoltaics. It was just wonderful. And the fact that 150 people made it out to an island, which is not an easy thing, showed that the interest that people have in these technologies is just really incredible.
Great. Can you talk about what sort of technologies you have?
Well, what we're trying to do, we're not utopian out here or anything. What we're trying to do is we're trying to make changes. We're trying to make as many as we can. We're off the grid to start with. So we do have a very complete photovoltaic system, and we do heat, most of our water is heated by the sun. We're starting to cook with the sun, purely with sunshine. We have a peat bog for sewage treatment. We have, as I said, the lighthouse is solar powered. We do a lot of composting, including the humanure. And we have a windmill that is an assist to the photovoltaics for our electricity. And the main thing we're doing is we're trying to conserve, cut back on fossil fuels, find ways to make get by with a tankless propane for this, a tankless for that. And we've cut our propane use from about 80 tanks a season down to about 30 in the space of the last 4 years.
Jeff, why do you think it's important to make all of these changes? What's motivating you to do this?
Well, for us, I think being out on the island has given us sort of an unusual perspective on the rest of the world, and being off the grid has helped. And seeing the effect it has on people when they come and visit. And I think, you know, it's really sort of a revolutionary situation we've got here. The petroleum is not going to last forever. The consequences of using it are astronomical. The alternative energy in essence is cheap. It's downright cheap. It's just that We don't have the system set up to support it at this point. We're still living off of the status quo. And I think that the more people find out about it and realize it, the much more people are already interested, keenly interested. The thing we have to do now is to see the long-range consequences of not going with alternative energy, to understand the hidden costs in your power bill and what you pay for a tank of gas at the gas station. You're only seeing a small part of the costs of it. And if you take into account the environmental aspects, the health aspects, the long-range interests for our children and everybody else, alternative energy is cheap.
I think we have a caller on the line. Are you there?
I am.
Can you say what your name is and where you're calling from?
I can. My name's Jenny, and I'm from Sedgwick. And I just have a biodiesel question. My husband and I have been very interested in the possibility of biodiesel because we have young children, and we'd like them to have a future.
Good idea.
Yeah, wouldn't that be lovely? So my question is, one of the things we found out about just regular diesel cars is that they're pretty tough in the winter for getting started. And if it's particularly cold, I think the oil thickens or something, and they're just really hard to start. And I'm wondering if biodiesel acts the same way, or if there's just any difference between how the car will run in the summer versus the winter, since we have that here in Maine.
Yeah, biodiesel will act the same way as a diesel car. In fact, it'll act a little bit worse. In the wintertime, you have to winterize biodiesel. They winterize petroleum diesel in the winter as well, but you just don't realize it because they do it before it gets to your car. But if with the biodiesel, you have to mix it in the wintertime with generally the accepted rule of thumb is 20% biodiesel and 80% winterized diesel.
Okay, so in the winter, you just switch back to more petroleum base. I didn't know if it's like, I know in some places you put heaters or blankets on your car if
yeah.
you have a garage, and that can work. But
yeah, and you still, depending on how cold it is, I mean, you're still going to have to treat it like it's, diesel vehicles are different than gasoline vehicles for sure, and you do have to pay more attention. And when it gets real cold, a lot of diesels already have a block heater in them, so you'll plug in your diesel when it gets real cold, or sometimes if that's an option, you can even bring your battery inside.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of different little babysitting techniques for diesels. They are a little bit more trouble than a gas engine in the cold weather.
In the short term, not in the long run.
just in the cold weather. But if you're running, if you're running winterized biodiesel, then you should just find out how to take care of a regular diesel. And
okay.
the same precautions as running petroleum
yep.
diesel.
Okay. And is there any, I know there's literature some places and on the internet and stuff, but can you recommend good sources for finding out information about biodiesel? And
there's
and that's all. Thank you.
What's that? Thank you.
That's all. I'm just
do you want websites? Or?
Sure. That would be easiest for me.
Okay.
Thanks.
There's the National Biodiesel Board, which is at www.biodiesel.org.
Okay.
And there's a website called Journey to Forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what their actual web address is.
How do you spell that out?
To. Okay. To Forever, as in 2-0. And they have a lot of information on there, and there's sort of a discussion group online there. Also, World Energy is a distributor of biodiesel, and they're at www.worldenergy.net.
Okay.
And if you want to get in touch with the Down East Biodiesel Co-op, you can email Keith and myself at downeastbiodiesel@yahoo.com.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Jeff, why don't we jump back to you?
Sure.
With the Solar Sunday, you were obviously talking with a lot of people who came there with their various experiences. What was your sense of, were people who were visiting, did they have alternative energy sources at their own homes, or are they just trying to find out more information to see how they could use them down the line? What was your sense?
Yeah, I think a lot of people have done a few things. They might have. Certainly, they do some organic gardening and composting and things like that. And a lot of people are seriously looking at putting photovoltaics in. I know Daryl DeJoy, who was there for the day, never ceased speaking with people. One person after another was interested in photovoltaics. And the same with the windmill. And certainly with the biodiesel, Peter Arnold from Chiwanki was here for the day and spoke to people about biodiesel. And people are a little loath to make a big leap because they're worried about the dollar figures. It seems so expensive to them. But the more people are finding out, the more the sense they can see in going ahead and making an investment, even though there's no help right now from the government and not too many tax advantages to it.
I want to give the phone number one more time for anyone who may be listening. If you have a question or a comment, or really just we're also interested in hearing what are people doing in their lives. Are you switching to a vehicle that gets better gas mileage, or to a bike, or are you carpooling, or are you maybe if you're in the Bangor area using public transportation? What kinds of changes are you making in your life, or would you like to make? And do you have any questions for the folks we have here on the line? The phone number is 469-0500, or if you're out of the toll-free calling area, the toll-free number is 1-866-625-9378, which translates to 1-866-625-WERU. So please give us a call.
Why don't we address that? We will be taking a short break at the half hour. But the idea of cost and ease, and that's something that people can call in with too, if they have some sort of experiences and on how that was for them, cost and ease in switching to particularly to solar for their electric or heating needs. Can you speak about that, Jeff?
Yeah, you know, back in the 1970s, when we had the first big gush of alternative energy stuff going on, it was new, and there were some technical problems, which of course hadn't been resolved, and there were some failures, and there were some opportunists in the market. But basically, people were spending about $15 a watt for photovoltaics back then. That figure today can be as low as $5 a watt. It's come way down. For smaller systems, it's still more than that. Somebody like Daryl could give you some real accurate figures on that. But and windmills, too. They used to be gadgets that weren't very reliable, and they used to break down easily. These things are all becoming much more competitive now. There's much more of a market for it. A major part of European energy now is done with alternative means. And the more competition there is, the lower the prices are. The warranties are just incredible what you can get on some of this stuff now. 15, 20-year warranties on stuff that people used to laugh about as being, you know, so unreliable. So it's making a lot of sense economically, even now, without the support of the government.
I think we have one more call. We'll take this one, another call, and then we'll go to break. So, caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Can you say who you are and where you're calling from, please?
Hi, this is Daryl from Penobscot Solar.
Well,
hi.
That's convenient. Meredith,
Amy, Andrea, Keith, and Jeff. How are you guys doing?
Hi.
Jeff, thanks for having us out there, myself and Stu Hall, who works with me, for Solar Sunday. And I wanted to address the issues of cost because that's so much in the forefront, and Jeff got a good start there. First, Jeff was talking about, you know, the environmental costs, and some simple things that people can remember are, well, one thing is a 75-watt solar panel, just a single 75-watt solar panel, saves over its life, and generally they're given a 20-year warranty, as Jeff just said, about 7,000 pounds of carbon dioxide from being emitted into the atmosphere. And, you know, that's a very simple number to remember. And you have to remember that a typical home will have anywhere from 10 to 30 75-watt solar panels on it, and that's an average energy-efficient home that you wouldn't recognize the difference between it and a typical grid-connected home. Hmm. So that's a considerable amount of pollution saved, just that alone. The cost of systems, because the efficiency has been going up and up, the sheer cost is best measured, I think, somewhere around $6 a watt you should be able to get a system for these days. We have a website, and it's purely an informational website because so many people are looking for sources of information. And www.penobscotsolar is our website. And go to the Frequently Asked Questions page. It's good informational stuff.
Is that .com or .org?
.com.
In your experience, Daryl, do you have a sense of how many people in Maine are using solar at this point?
Well, I don't in exact numbers. I would believe it's far less than 1%, honestly. But the number who are interested is far higher than that. And I feel that so much of my job at this point is education. It's planting seeds, and it's the same, I'm sure, with Andrea and Keith and with Jeff and, you know, everyone who's involved in the renewable energy industry in whatever form it takes. I just think, you know, our job is to help people to understand that this is very viable stuff. It's the thing that I like best about my job, and I've been in electronics for a long time and electrical things, and the best thing about being in solar is after we install a system, I rarely see my customers again, except maybe it's in the grocery store or when I'm putting solar in their neighbor's house. In other words, it's not a maintenance and service-based industry at all. It's very reliable.
What kind of process is involved in converting an already existing electrical system over to solar? I know a lot of people think about installing solar if they're building something new, but what if you have an existing home or that has a regular electrical system? Is that a huge construction project?
No, it isn't at all. And I think this goes to not just any person considering solar, but any person who's concerned at all about where we're headed as a society. The very first thing we encourage anybody to do who's thinking about getting solar or anybody who calls us for any information is to first make your home as energy efficient as possible. And of course, from our standpoint, that's electrically. So there isn't a lot of conversion of wiring or construction to be done so much as possibly looking at that old 20-year-old reach-in freezer that uses 3.5 kilowatts a day and maybe saying, well, maybe it's time we find one of these Energy Star rated ones that uses just 1 kilowatt a day. You know, that alone, you'll save yourself 30 cents a day. And that conversely means that if you're considering going to photovoltaics, your photovoltaic system will cost you that much less to install because you don't need to create that extra power. We look at things like electric stoves, electric hot water heaters, and again, electric hot water heaters use the most power. It's the least efficient way to create heat anyway, using electricity. And, of course, the one thing we promote highly is using compact fluorescent light bulbs. And, again, all this information is on our website. To find actual appliances, there's another great website, which the government has. It's www.energystar.gov. And that lists all major appliance manufacturers and their appliances, gives the rating for all of them, tells how much power they use. And, you know, I guess the short answer to all this is the more efficient you can make your electrical use, the less the cost is of the solar. And there's actually very little conversion of the house, per se, as far as electrical or construction.
Do you find that you more often install solar for electricity or hot water? Is there a...
We don't actually do any hot water installations at all. We're purely photovoltaic, and we do some wind systems where it's applicable.
Great.
Thanks for calling, Daryl.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to go to break.
The switch and the lights come on. I set up my garbage and like magic it's gone. I turn on the faucet and the clear water's flow. I gas up my car and away I go. I'm in my armchair watching some wild animal show. There are places like that up there, it's sure nice to know. And as the carnivore closes in for the kill, they don't show the strip mine just over the... Why should I? the shelves are well stocked. Dumpsters full of food out back are locked. I pray to the god of the economy and ask what my country can do for me. 'Cause I can buy a second home where I can sneak up, buy a golf course in the mountains, the interest I can write off, or on the beach where storms are a frequent occurrence, with taxpayer subsidized flood insurance. Why should I care? Why should I care? Because all of this is not a problem for me. It's just an opportunity. Ecological collapse is imminent, you say. We're losing at least 100 species a day. Hit it to a brick wall at 100 miles an hour. It's not just about survival, it's about power. Land that is 10 miles inland. If it gets too hot here, I'll just move to Finland. Get a glass bubble where I can hide that will withstand the bricks thrown by the ones outside. Why should I care? Why should I care? Because all of this is not a problem for me. It's just an opportunity. Should I care? Because all of this is not a problem for me. Then again, I guess it could be.
And that's Robert Hoyt with Why Should I Care? We have a caller on the line.
Hello.
Hi. Can you say your name and where you're calling from, please?
Yeah, my name is Adam. I'm calling from Athens.
Great. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. That's a great program, and I'm learning a lot of useful information, so thank you. I guess I'm calling for a couple things. One is I've been looking around for diesel automobiles, and I'm having some trouble locating them. So I was wondering if there is some resources that people on your program may know about to, you know, to assist in finding something that I could begin using biodiesel with. I found a 178-passenger bus, but it gets seven miles to the gallon. I don't think that's really going to cut it.
As long as you fill it up every time you go somewhere with people.
If you, have you looked at Uncle Henry's in the automotive section?
Uncle Henry's, yeah. There's kind of slim pickings in there as far as diesel.
Okay, keep looking, because sometimes we find a lot of diesel automobiles in the Volkswagen section.
In the VW section?
VW section,
yep.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, VW makes a pretty good handful of them.
Okay.
You can find full size pickups made by domestic corporations. Although I'd stay away from the ones made in the 70s. Stay away from Volvo diesels.
Volvo diesels.
Bad.
Why?
Jessica. Okay. We explain.
Yeah. So Volkswagen is good, and then some of the other larger ones.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of off the
Mercedes
top of my head.
Benz
and any particular years that are like after 1980, and you said 1994 is a good.
The as far as not having rubber components.
Okay, right.
You can pretty much rely that after 94, no rubber components for sure. And I had heard that Volkswagen after 80.
Okay.
Yeah, it all depends on the auto manufacturer and when that particular manufacturer decided to switch over to synthetic components.
Okay, so right now Uncle Henry's is
that's
major
where we've been looking, but I'm sure that there's on the computer. I'm sure there's lots of.
I've done lots of work on Google. I'm having some trouble.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
So
maybe that would be a good thing. And then another thing is, I've been talking with some people here about like the lack of transportation in central Maine, especially in, I don't know, I can give you my email or maybe people could call in if there is any interest in people getting together, like a biodiesel kind of transportation, you know, like a van or something.
What a
that
good
would,
idea.
Would
yeah, go
make,
ahead.
Great make idea. Trips between central Maine, I don't know, Bangor, down to Portland, and then out to, I don't know, Farmington or something like that, and all the way across.
Go ahead. And,
yeah. My email is adam@ecohumanist.org.
Right. Great. And did you get our email address when we gave it out earlier?
No, I didn't.
It's downeastbiodiesel.
Oh, yes, I have that. downeastbiodiesel@yahoo.com.
Yeah. Get in touch with us after the show.
Okay, is that the South China? No.
No, we're here in the Down East area, in Blue Hill area.
Okay, great.
Yep.
I will send you an email.
Splendid.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Adam.
Bye-bye.
And Steve, are you still there? Jeff, I'm sorry. That's your brother.
Yeah.
Sorry. I have a question for you about PACs. I just recently was reading, and I can't remember what organization was doing it, but a study that someone was doing about just how much air pollution there is on the water because of the boats.
Yeah.
That there's just a lot of emissions out there that a lot of us aren't exposed to every day. And you have PACs. Can you tell us about PACs?
Yes, I'd love to. She was built in 1951 in Booth Bay Harbor for a family that lived out on a little island at the mouth of the Damariscotta River and to use as a shuttle back and forth to the mainland. And then she was up on shore for quite a few years until about 1995, a friend of mine, Jim Austin, down in Damariscotta, bought her and reconditioned her and rebuilt the engine and refastened her and made her all beautiful again. And he ran her up and down the Damariscotta River doing eco tours for 4 summers. And then this past year, since we started doing the eco tours out at the lighthouse every morning, he talked to us about maybe taking her over, which we have. And I went down this spring, and we spent a week or so getting her ready to put in the water and him teaching me how to take care of a diesel, which I knew nothing about at all. Turns out it's pretty easy compared to a regular engine. And so we've had her out on Isle of Ho all this summer, and we've been taking people. It's a non-commercial thing. It's something we just do for the educational value of showing people how to do it. We make some of our biodiesel fuel right at the lighthouse. And we use the mix that Andrea was talking about, the 2080 mix, because she's an old diesel engine. And she just putters right along, does about 7 knots, and she's pretty as can be. She looks reminds people of the African queen. So it gets a lot of attention, and that's really interesting because that's a way to get people to talk about biodiesel. And she does. She burns so much cleaner, and she raises a lot of eyebrows. And we do have all these diesels chugging around hauling traps out there. And people are asking about her, and, you know, little by little by little. Well, what we hope to see is, people catching lobsters with biodiesel someday.
And no one has mentioned this time, but in talking about biodiesel before, and we have another caller we'll go to in a minute, the smell that does come from the biodiesel.
Well, it's pleasant.
I hear French fries.
A lot of people say French fries or donuts. In my opinion, it that whole
rancid fat,
burning oil smell.
Right,
not in the sense of burning car
like
oil, but like a
county fair.
County fair oil.
Maybe
smell.
We'll go to our caller now.
Yeah. It's definitely better than petroleum.
Just imagine highways that smelled like that rather than what they smell like. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Could you say your name and where you're calling from, please?
Yes, I'm David. I'm from Deer Isle.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. I'm a small contractor, and I just want to say started using biodiesel in my tractor, and we've put in about 10 gallons so far. We've just started on it, but other than being hungry all the time, it's worked out very well.
Great.
And we haven't had any problems as far as power, and one of the positive things is that when we do start it up and run it, that we do get the white smoke as opposed to the black smoke, and the smell is it's not that it takes a little getting used to because it does smell like food a little bit, but other than that, it's just a nice feeling, and we haven't had any problem with power or anything like that.
And what kind of tractor is that?
It's just a small lawn and garden tractor, you know, with a backhoe and a bucket, and I haven't had much problem at all. Like I said, it worked very, very well.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you so much
great.
For calling in.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and I just want to encourage others to give it a shot because it really hasn't been any problem at all.
I appreciate the positive feedback, David.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, bye.
Great. Thanks. Bye. We have another caller. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name's Joe. I'm calling from Warren.
Thanks for calling.
I didn't hear the whole show, but maybe you already answered these questions. The first question is, if a lot of people were to use biofuel for diesels...
Biodiesel.
What, what's that?
I'm sorry, I was just saying biodiesel. I thought you were searching for
biodiesel, right. Would we run out of oil to use for that? I mean, can I go to a local McDonald's and get, you know, enough fuel to fuel a diesel?
Actually, that's you brought up a very good point. you can use fast food oil or, you know, any friolator oil. And talking from I've talked to many wastewater treatment plant people, and they said that one of their biggest concerns right now is what to do with this excess or this leftover oil. And you can make a biodiesel. You can make from many different kinds of plants: soy, rapeseed, mustard, algae, corn. I mean, you name it, it can be made from the vegetables. And so, in the sense of running out of vegetable oil, right now there's a lot of issues concerned with not necessarily like not planting certain crops because you don't want to flood markets, and it would take a lot of changes in mindset. But there's just so many different materials that can be used to make the biodiesel fuel. That
at this point it's not a concern because it's such a small scale market at this point. There is a surplus of oil, both waste oil and virgin oil, and the farmers are pretty excited about this because it gives a new market for their crop. Biodiesel is not by any means the magic bullet. It's not, you know, switching 100% to biodiesel for all of our country's oil needs isn't going to be the answer, but it's definitely a good step away from petroleum. And the more people that do step in that direction, the better. And we're not going to have to worry about running out at this point.
And at the same time, also, people are, I think, thinking about alternatives for decreasing dependence, not only creating alternatives, but decreasing dependence. So if anyone wants to call with stories about that, what are you doing to decrease your dependence, in addition to maybe some of these alternative technologies, things like carpooling, like Adam was talking about, trying to set up carpools or public transportation where that exists, or riding your bike or switching vehicles. Does anyone have any thoughts about that? And if you'd like to call in, again, the number is 469-0500 or 1-866-625-9378 is toll-free.
Did that answer your question?
It did. It answered that question. I have one other question, and that is I haul about a ton of stone when I do shows up and down the Eastern Seaboard, and I haul that with a van, and I sleep in the van. That's why I like a van. But it seems that hardly anybody makes a full size diesel van. And I've heard that the Cummins diesel is supposed to be the best. I hear that GMC is bad, but I think that the GMC was bad when they tried to convert a gas to diesel motor, but now that they're just doing a straight diesel, they're dependable now?
That's my understanding, too. And I'm not sure about who makes a newer van. I know that I've come across Dodge diesel vans. I think there's vans are kind of hard to find, but there's a smattering of them out there. And I know Dodge is putting a Cummins in their full size trucks.
Right, but I haven't heard of any in vans. But you say there are some old ones out there. I'll keep looking.
Yeah, and I know that the Chewonki Foundation down in Wiscasset area. Are you familiar with them?
Sure.
Peter Arnold, and they have a van that they're running on biodiesel. To the best of my knowledge, yeah.
Mm.
So you could get in touch with him. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Good.
Thanks for calling.
Yep.
And we have another caller on the line. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Yes, I'm Jay from Winterport.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I just have a quick question. Can I heat my home with biodiesel fuel?
The quick answer is yes, you can.
Great.
but you should check into whether you have rubber components. Uh-huh. in your fuel system, and keep in mind that biodiesel is solvent and, you know, will clean out, you know, you want to change those filters,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, all the things that we've said before.
Right.
And if you have more specific questions and you want to contact us later, you can... Did you get our web address?
Or no, our I know email you gave it several times.
Its email address is it's downeastbiodiesel@yahoo.com.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Great. We are definitely closing in towards the end of the show. Before we jump back to Jeff, why don't we have Andrew and Keith, while we're on the topic of biodiesel, quickly talk about the Downeast Biodiesel Co-op?
Well, just briefly, we're a buying co-op, so we're buying, the idea is to buy in bulk so that we can get a cheaper price. So we're not producing the fuel ourselves yet. We're buying it from World Energy, which is located in Cambridge, and we have a alliance with Frontier Oil in South China. He goes down and picks it up and brings it, it sells it to us. He's a home heating oil distributor. We have a large tank in Penobscot, and he drops off our order in Penobscot, and then it sits in the tank, and people, co-op members, come and pick it up as they need it. If you want to join the co-op, it's $5 dues a month, and you can get in touch with Keith or myself through our email, and we always want to have new members. The more members, the better.
And we haven't actually said your name since the beginning of the show, so if anybody's tuning in now, that's Andrea DeFrancesco and Keith Pearson. And maybe one more time with the email address or the phone numbers?
It's downeastbiodiesel@yahoo.com. Our P.O. Box is P.O. Box 106 in Blue Hill, 04614. You can call me at 469-6235.
And you can call me at 207-374-2103 with any questions concerning biodiesel or the co-op.
And so that's recently started, biodiesel co-op, and you already have a large number of people interested in members.
We're pretty much, we have about 40 members, and growing daily.
Great.
We're just getting our second order of over 500 gallons of biodiesel delivered on Tuesday. So we've already gone through about 600 gallons. The other thing is that we are currently winterizing our tank. We need to keep our tank heated for the winter so it doesn't gel. And being a small, just starting up co-op with no capital, we could use any donations that people want to give of wood or insulation or...
Or money, for that matter.
Or a hot water heater.
So what kind of wood are you talking about? Like wood for burning or wood for building a structure?
2x4s and things like that.
Structure.
Plywood.
Structure.
To build a structure.
Okay, let's jump back to Jeff Burke. Thank you for being on the phone line this whole time. Of course, this hour has gone by so quickly, and I know that you would have had a lot to say about talking about the myths and concerns as far as you're concerned about solar power and a number of different issues which you could talk on. But knowing we just have a few minutes left, what would you like to hit home with about from your experiences and your perspective on alternative energy, being a user of it? And we should say you're in, people who come there are educated on it, and I know that you want to start doing more regular eco tours, not just for those who come to stay at your inn, but people who want to come to the island.
Right. That's right. And unfortunately, I can't give you a phone number, and I can't give you an email thing because I don't have any. But you can come over on the boat and find me, or you can write me at Lighthouse Point, Idaho, 04645.
It's Jeff Burke.
I would like to touch on one thing real quick, just because I think it points out the whole human factor here, Meredith.
Yes, please.
Cooking. Not the greatest use of electricity, but the point is you can cook with the sun for free. And we do it. And we run an inn. Now, it's not our only source of cooking, of course, and we still use propane. But we're getting away from it. And the reason is because we're changing. You know, the way we see ourselves in relationship to energy is changing. We go outside, and we, right outside the kitchen door, and you could do this in your kitchen, too, with reflectors, but you can get up to 750 degrees with the sunshine. And we've made all our own equipment. We have a solar oven gets up to 400 degrees. We have a solar hot plate that you can saute veggies in. You could cook a pizza on it if you wanted to. And it's all free. And the technology is available. There are patterns available for these gizmos. There's a great little yellow book put out in California called Cooking with the Sun that has patterns for parabolic cookers and solar cookers. But I just want to finish by saying that we need to make a qualitative leap just in the way we see ourselves in relationship to energy. And it's going to be a rosy future, by golly.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff Burke from Idaho. If you can go over to Idaho and ask where the Lighthouse Inn is, you can, or the Keeper's House Inn, can go there.
And we do have one more phone call. Which,
yeah, we can take quickly. Take a quick call. Welcome.
Hi. Joel calling from Frontier Oil Company in South China.
Hey, Joel.
Hi, Andrea.
Just mention people's names and they call in.
I love it.
Well, I just became aware that the program was on, and I just wanted to comment that what Downey's Biodiesel Co-op is doing is great, and it's a way that we can get the product out into the marketplace throughout the state of Maine. And if anyone is interested in forming co-ops elsewhere or interested in deliveries outside of the Downey's Biodiesel Co-op area, that they can give us a call, and we'd be happy to help them with any of those situations.
And what's that number?
The number they can call is 800-773-2409, and they can reach us on the web at frontieroilme.com. That's frontieroilme.com.
Great.
Thank you very much. And so we thank you, Andrea DeFrancesco, Keith Pearson from the Downeast Biodiesel Co-op, Jeff Burke from Idaho, from the Keeper's House Inn. And for more information, you've got their contacts. Also, we had an informative website given about solar questions at penobscotsolar.com. And we thank you very much.
Yes, thanks to all the callers.
Get excited about new inventions. I'm sure most were made with the best of intentions. Thought it was cool to put a man on the moon, but now I've begun to sing a different tune. Technology and science have become a religion, based on blind faith, not conscious decision. When answers cause the problems, it's time to stop and think. Slam on the brakes and make a U-turn from the brink. It's quitting time, it's quitting time, it's quitting time on that high-tech plantation. It's quitting time, it's quitting time on that old high-tech plantation. It's quitting time for good. They try to tell us how hard it used to be, back when things ended towards simplicity. But our way of life is based on false pretenses. God, look at all the unintended consequences. It's quitting time, it's quitting time, it's quitting time on that high-tech plantation. It's quitting time, it's quitting time on that old high-tech plantation. It's quitting time for good. Up by lies, but some of us have come see things through different eyes. Tomorrow there'll be more of us than there are today. We're that ragged, jagged, cutting edge, and we all say, it's quitting time, it's quitting time, it's quitting time on that high-tech plantation. It's quitting time on that old high-tech.
solution. It's quit time for good. It's quit time. It's quit time. It's quit time on that high-tech plantation. It's quit time. It's quit time on that old high-tech plantation. It's quitting time for good.
That was Robert Hoyt again with Quitting Time.
You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Meredith DeFrancesco.
And I'm Amy Brown. We'd like to thank Joel Mann for engineering today, Andy Buckley for web support, and you for listening and acting.
You can contact us here at WERU or by emailing radioactivenews@hotmail.com.
You can listen to archived Radioactive programs on the web at www.freespeech.org/RAN or at mainindymedia.org.
Join us again this next Thursday for Radioactive at 4.